Top 10 Scams in Public Health That Parents Should Know by Pam Long. First, violations of informed consent with vaccines. Doctors and nurses fail to inform parents of vaccine risks by design because of a financial compensation system awarded by insurance networks only if the majority of the patients in the clinic are vaccinated. True informed consent would include potential benefits, known adverse reactions including disability and death, lack of liability for the doctor and manufacturer, options to test natural immunity in lieu of vaccination, and rights to vaccine exemptions. From vaccine sales pitches, what your doctor won't tell you. Doctors are financially conflicted under this performance recognition program, up to $400 per child, to coerce vaccine uptake. Any parent who communicates a choice to delay or refuse a vaccine can expect the doctor to label the parent as difficult, and in some cases, the doctor will dismiss the family from the practice. Parents are pushing back on the vaccine schedule, with 76 doses of 18 vaccines by age 18 compared to 11 doses in 1986. Doctors often provide a vaccine information sheet, VIS, with each vaccine, which lists pain and mild swelling at the injection site as the only possible adverse reaction. Lacking full transparency, parents are not informed of the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, VICP, which was designed to address vaccine disability and death in a quasi-judicial government process, where records are commonly sealed from the public and compensations are rare. Doctors also do not inform patients that vaccines have been shielded from liability since 1986, and disability from adverse reaction is completely the risk of the patient to include medical expenses, loss of employment, and loss of quality of life. This risk should be part of the cost-benefit discussion for illnesses which are extremely rare and non-fatal in the first world in 2025. 2. Violations of religious rights in daycare, school, college, employment. In recent years, schools and employers have attempted to ignore people's religious exemption rights in the U.S. Constitution and instead imposed illegal religious scrutiny tests, which are prohibited in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Regarding school exemption rights, from Who Can You Trust? How Schools and Employers Violate Exemption Rights. As of 2024, parents report that various schools and programs claim that they do not accept non-medical exemptions. My advice to these parents is to know their exemption rights and to not rely on administrators to inform them correctly. If a school is following state vaccine statute, then the school must also follow state exemption statute. Colorado Revised Statute 25-4-902 contains the immunization recommendations, and Colorado Revised Statute 25-4-903 contains the vaccine exemption rights. Regarding college and employment exemption rights, from Who Can You Trust? How Schools and Employers Violate Exemption Rights. The pandemic expanded vaccine mandates beyond students and healthcare workers to all employment sectors. It took years in the judicial process, but courts have ruled that denial of religious exemptions is discrimination as reported by KDVR in May 2024. U.S. Appeals Court rejects CU's vaccine mandate, cites religious animus. A U.S. Court of Appeals ruled on May 7th that the University of Colorado Anschutz School of Medicine's COVID-19 vaccination mandate and refusal to include a religious exemption were unconstitutional under the First Amendment, according to court documents. According to the opinion written by 10th Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Allison Eade, a government employer may not punish some employees, but not others, for the same activity due only to differences in the employees' religious beliefs. Invoking public health and safety, CU implemented a hostile religious scrutiny test, asked applicants about previous vaccines, and set a requirement that the religion must forbid all vaccines for all adherents in all circumstances, and then rejected exemptions which did not meet their religious scrutiny. CU also invented a revised discriminatory religious exemption process, which denied all students and yet allowed some employees to work remotely. CDPHE was complicit because CDPHE failed to direct CU and other employers to the statutory process for religious exemptions. Additionally, schools with school-based health clinics are in a posture to violate parental rights. These school-based health centers work in private partnerships with Melinda Gates and Planned Parenthood to promote vaccines, abortions, transgender ideology. Schools are also operating parent portals, which routinely share student medical records and vaccine records with the entire district staff and should limit access to student medical records to the school nursing office in accordance with privacy laws. Third, violations of consumer protections at hospitals and pharmacies. Hospitals and pharmacies have adopted predatory sales tactics for profit too. Every fall, the local pharmacy at your grocery store will offer customers 8 vaccines: COVID, pneumonia, shingles, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, RSV, and influenza. In Are We Protecting Grandma? I reported the low efficacy and serious adverse reactions associated with these vaccines. In Are Vaccines Marketed to Senior Adults Safe and Effective? I reported how public health is incentivized to market these vaccines to seniors, while the evidence indicates that the COVID vaccines do not prevent death or hospitalization, and the influenza vaccine actually increases risk of infection to other respiratory viruses by 65%. Why does public health refuse to promote vitamin D for all ages during October through March, which is the key susceptibility for respiratory virus infection? Vitamin D is not profitable like vaccines. Hospitals include an intentionally vague word of biologics on their consent forms, and there have been documented cases of doctors vaccinating patients while under sedation because the patient unknowingly consented to biologics. When people request to cross out this word on consent forms, hospital staff often tell patients that they do not have a way to print out the form and coerce the patient to sign the electronic form as is on a screen. Furthermore, hospitals offer every incoming person to the emergency room a DTaP or TDAP vaccine, regardless of situation, while only in extremely rare situations would a patient have a non-bleeding puncture wound with animal feces contaminated with infected bacteria. The screening is presented as, "Are you up to date on your DTaP or TDAP vaccine?" without any explanation of what the risks for diphtheria and tetanus are, and without explanation that the vaccine requires weeks to provide any potential benefit. Often this vaccine is offered as just a tetanus vaccine, without explanation that it is actually a tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis combination vaccine. Fourth, violations of medical ethics at doctors' offices. In Colorado, numerous minor consent laws passed under governor. Polis's 2 terms allow children at the age of 12 to consent for contraceptives, abortion, STD testing and treatment, IUD and cervical cancer screening, substance abuse treatment, mental health services, and psychotherapy. In these areas of minor consent, providers are not required to notify parents of treatment or medications prescribed, and parents need the approval of the minor to access medical records. These laws assume that a 12-year-old child can manage his or her own health care. Doctors of 12-year-old children often tell parents that they cannot enter the exam room anymore. In actuality, the child can opt to have his, her parents in any medical appointment, just like any adult can choose to include a patient advocate. In the $1 million cost per person for gender transition, I reported on the predatory profit over the lifespan for each experimental transgender operation, while imposing a burden of lifelong medical dependency to mitigate permanent adverse effects. I concluded, minor consent for experimental and pharmaceutical medical treatment is irresponsible and unethical. It violates the principles of informed consent by giving treatment to a child who does not have the cognitive competence to understand risks, and it omits screening for the medical history that only a parent or guardian would be able to provide. Parents are advised to set up notifications with their health insurance companies for newly prescribed drugs for their children, and to discuss this issue with administrators at their schools who may not be aware of the recent changes to minor consent. Ultimately, families assume all of the risks and costs of these treatments. Fifth, privacy violations in CIIS database for intended coercion. In medical surveillance from womb to tomb, Colorado Immunization Information System, CIIS, I explained my pharmaceutical industry capture concerns with CIIS. An opt-out system instead of an opt-in system. Failures in security audits, inaccuracy costing taxpayers millions of dollars annually with no evidence of public health benefit, shares personal health data for profit, never uses functions for highly reactive vaccine notifications for public safety, uses data for coercive reminder, recall home visit operations, uses data to target populations for vaccine uptake, including low-income families and pregnant women, and operates with goals for a 2030 federal vaccine tracking database connected to REAL-ID. I encourage parents to opt out of this tracking system, as well as school mental health surveys. Six, the fraud in school mental health surveys. In school mental health surveys are a tool for expanding pharmaceutical drugs to students, I detailed the questions included in these surveys to measure alleged symptoms. I explained why parents should opt out of all mental health surveys at schools, including iMatter and Health Kids Colorado survey. These surveys are data mining students for highly sensitive and self-incriminating information, which could have lifelong repercussions. This information is designed to be collected by third parties, people who are not mental health professionals, for referrals for counseling, SSRI drugs, and gender dysphoria counseling. These surveys and alleged school mental health assessments are not actually evidence-based instruments used to diagnose mental health disorders per the DSM. Instead, the BMAS, or Behavior Intervention Monitoring Assessment System, is social emotional learning, SEL, compliance monitoring tool. Furthermore, the survey data collected for the state could result in restrictions in future gun ownership for the respondents. In How the New Office of Gun Control Shall Infringe on the Second Amendment, I explain how CDPHE collects the school survey data in the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. The office's surveillance and survey data systems are already controversial. Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, BRFSS, Healthy Kids Colorado Survey, and Colorado Healthy Schools Smart Source. This is an indicator that gun ownership will become a public health priority, not a public safety priority, and will be tied to mental health. Any person indicating any level of mental health symptoms in a survey is potentially at risk of engaging in gun violence. These surveys are designed to data mine and profile minors, which could result in a lifelong label, which later disqualifies a person from gun ownership. For example, I completed the iMatter School Mental Health Assessment in the controversial HB 23-1003, and my score of 1 from reporting using CBD oil once in the past year resulted in a medium risk for substance abuse problems and a recommendation for 6 sessions counseling without parental consent. I can only conclude that these non-evidence-based mental health surveys are not intended to help students, but to flag students. Parents need to opt out their students from these surveys administered by third-party data collectors, acting without transparency with parents, and educate their children on their right to not self-incriminate on drug and alcohol use. 7. The risks of health data trackers. Children's Health Defense responded in opposition to HHS Secretary Kennedy's broadly stated support for wearable health data trackers. In Every American Wearing a Wearable is Not a Vision We Share. There are both health risks and privacy risks. Wireless technologies, including wearables, have clear and well-documented harms. These devices continuously emit radio frequency, RF radiation, in direct contact with the body for long periods of time. They also have multiple transmitters, receivers, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and cellular, operating on several different radio bands. Cumulative and long-term exposures have known significant risks. RF radiation exposure is associated with a wide range of adverse health effects, including increased cancer risk, cellular stress, increase in harmful free radicals, genetic damages, structural and functional changes of the reproductive system, learning and memory deficits, neurological disorders, and negative impacts on general well-being. Wireless technologies also have extensive and well-documented privacy impacts. They continuously collect biometric data, including heart rate, quality of sleep, blood pressure, cholesterol levels, oxygen levels, calorie burn, sweat gland emissions, hormone levels, body temperature, emotional responses, movement, and precise geolocation. This biometric data is transmitted over the internet and can be used to create an intimate profile of the user's physical and psychological states. This intimate profile can be made available to employers, medical providers, private corporations, artificial intelligence systems, insurance companies, and government entities. This surveillance infrastructure may lay the groundwork for psychological targeting, predictive modeling, social control, and unprecedented intrusions into personal freedom. 8. Corruption in family court and parent evaluators. Parents in the process of a contentious divorce or with allegations of abuse are led to believe by the court that they must hire a parent evaluator to assess the health and safety of the children. There are no certification requirements for parent evaluators, and there have been at least 2 cases of complete frauds in Colorado resulting in class action suits. As Colorado Politics reported, these evaluators are unqualified with fake credentials, unfit with abuse in their records, and often biased in favor of child abusers. Responsible parents have lost custody based on the recommendations of these parent evaluator frauds, who can charge up to $10,000. 9. Fluoride is neurotoxic. In 2024, federal court decided that water fluoridation is neurotoxic and lowers IQ, with fluoride being especially harmful to pregnant women and young children. The American Dental Association and American Fluoridation Society continue to defend the use of fluoride. The EPA plans to spend 6 more years to review the issue and recently decided to appeal the fluoride court decision. The court decision, as summarized by Fluoride Action Network. The issue before this court is whether the plaintiffs have established by a preponderance of the evidence that the fluoridation of drinking water at levels typical in the United States poses an unreasonable risk of injury to health of the public within the meaning of amended TSCA. For the reasons set forth below, the court so finds. Specifically, the court finds that fluoridation of water at 0.7 milligrams per liter, the level presently considered optimal in the United States, poses an unreasonable risk of reduced IQ in children. The court finds there is an unreasonable risk of such injury, a risk sufficient to require the EPA to engage with a regulatory response. One thing the EPA cannot do, however, in the face of this court's finding, is to ignore that risk. 10th, predatory organ donation risks. Organ transplants are highly profitable surgeries. If people are designated organ donors, could it influence the quality of life-saving care that they receive at a hospital? What if a doctor decided that organs were more profitable than saving a life? How organ donations broke records even during the pandemic makes a person wonder how organ donors increased 18% in 2021 from 2020. During this time, ventilators were widely used, despite resulting high death rates, and in many cases, the families of the deceased were not allowed to enter hospitals, see the body, or hold a funeral. Given these circumstances, it might be prudent for a family to designate organ donation only after a family member is deceased.